part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Fanboy.com.
Shall we begin this podcast?
Yeah, man.
All right, let's get started. Merry, happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Well, it's a little early. As we're recording, we're still at the end of November, but the holiday season has officially begun. And my name is Christian Horn. This is the Part-Time Fanboy podcast returning after the Thanksgiving holiday. We took about a week off. And before that, there were like 2 or 3 weeks off. So the month of November has not been a productive one for Part-Time Fanboy, but it's called Part-Time Fanboy for a reason. And we are here to talk to our old friend, Clay Adams, who is returning with his book, Red Xmas, on Kickstarter, which is something we chatted about almost a year ago. I looked it up. I listened to the interview, and we talked about your second issue, and now your third issue is up on Kickstarter. Welcome to the podcast, Clay Adams. Welcome back.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Yes, it's always a pleasure to be with you, too. We actually had the chance to meet each other face-to-face at San Diego for a little bit, and that was nice. I don't usually get a chance to meet people in person that I've had on the podcast that are actually across the country like you are. So,
yes.
But it was great.
It was pretty cool because I was hanging out with our mutual friend D.E. Schrader at his table at
Action. D.E. Schrader, I love it. Anyway, go ahead.
D.E.
Yeah.
And I just turned around and I think I saw you standing there and I was like, hey, I know that guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We talked through the magic of Skype once, I think we did that. That was great. Well, I mean, since we chatted, because I re-listened to our interview and I had not read your book like at all. I mean, I was kind of flying blind and I had seen the project and on Kickstarter and I was like, oh, this is interesting. I want to support it. And obviously you were friends with Dave, D.E., I should say. I'm going to keep giving him such a hard time for that. But anyway, and I had not read it, but like, when I got the digital files, it's so funny because I am like the worst, like redeemer of Kickstarter projects, like ever. Like I will leave things sitting around unread, even if they're physical copies. Like I'll get a physical book and I'll be like, I'll get to it. You know, I'll get to it at some point. And so I'll download stuff and they'll sit on my computer and I won't get back to it. And particularly about like digital comics, there's something about it that they just sit there and then I have to transfer them to my tablet and, you know, whatever, or my phone. Anyway, the books had sat there for a while and I happened to be at a car wash and they were on my phone and I started reading them. And I loved it. Like, I loved this book. Like, it was so much fun. I didn't know what to expect because I knew it was kind of, you know, any guy who writes Pregnant Bitches of War is going to write, like, a crazy Christmas thing. But I don't know, like, I didn't expect to like it as much as I did. I was like, this is genius. And I think I, like, even texted you from the car wash. And I was like, Clay, I just read it, like, this is genius. And it's hysterical, and I love it, and I think it's great. And so everyone needs to go on Kickstarter. And I actually tried to do a search looking at Red Xmas, and I couldn't find it, so I had to use the link. So you need to tell people, like, yeah, I typed in Red Xmas, but maybe I used the dash or something, and it wasn't coming up, so I had to go to Facebook and find the link. But what's the best way for them to find you on Kickstarter?
Right. So our pretty link is friedcomics.com/redxmas.
Okay. Gotcha. Yes. Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. And everyone should go and support this book. I'm very excited for the third issue because as you know, I also got to the end and I was like, what the hell? hell? Where's the third issue? I want more of this. So I just love it. And I think it's great. And I also think you have a very messed up mind because there's so much crazy stuff in here that I was just like, that's so wrong. But it's so right at the same time.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, I like this even better that you you texted me from a car wash.
Yeah, you know.
I used your pull quote, by the way. That's a pull quote.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Where is it?
Oh, it's right. Well, Christian, if you go to friedcomics.com/FedXmas, you will see maybe about halfway down the page there's a whole section that's praise for the book. We got some nice quotes from Starburst Magazine and Outright Geekery and Part-Time Fanboy.
Oh, yes. Awesome. That's great. I got pulled, another quote pulled. That's great. My opinion is good for something. I'm scrolling down the page now and looking for it, but I'll get back to that later. I need to focus on you. But so what I want to know is, I mean, we chatted a little bit about this, but I was going in like completely, you know, blind. Now that I've read the book, I am very much like, how did you come up? Like, how do you approach Christmas like this? Like, what do you hate about Christmas, Clay, that you would create such a hardcore, like, I mean, it's not anti-Christmas, not at all, but there's a lot of stuff that people who love this holiday and consider it sacred would be like, oh my, no, you know, so.
Well, I do love Christmas, and so I guess I have a funny way of showing it. this is how I love, Christian. This is how I love. I always loved Christmas tales, but the more twisted ones. Like, I always thought Santa was kind of a dick in those claymation things.
Uh-oh, yeah.
So, you know, like
the Rasbank and stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. He's such a jerk in those, and so that I think probably got the ball rolling a little bit. And when I was young, I picked up some book. I can't even remember where. Some used bookshop. It was called Murder for Christmas.
Really?
And it was all Christmas themed murder mysteries. But some of them were really dark and twisted, and they had. I think this was a thing throughout, at least the cover, but I think throughout they had drawings by, and forgive me, I'm going to butcher his name. Is it Gayan Wilson?
I don't know.
He was like an old Playboy cartoonist.
Oh, okay.
And it was G-A-A-H-A-N.
I have not memorized the names of all the Playboy cartoonists. I'm sorry. Although I did interview one on the podcast once, but anyway, go ahead.
Well, anyway, it was all like horribly twisted stuff, like some chimney sweep is like cleaning out a chimney and finds like Santa's corpse rotting inside.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
This is what's clogging up your chimney, sir. Anyway, I think that sort of stuck, and so I guess this is my version of that.
That's so funny. Yeah, I mean, I reread it today during my lunch break. And as I went through it, first we should talk a little bit about the plot. I mean, I don't want to spoil anything, but obviously it takes place on Christmas. Santa is engaged in adult activities with Mrs. Claus, and his jolly meter, according to the elves, is up through the roof. And the elves are so naive that they don't know why, because Santa's, you know, getting his North Pole polished by Mrs. Claus. And it starts off that way. Well, no, actually, it starts off with this like really weird cult sort of thing, like religious right thing, right? Where it's like it takes place. Yeah, yeah. And
issue.
Yeah, yeah. That begins at the beginning. But anyway, there's that whole thing with Santa and Mrs. Claus. And the long and the short of it is that you get the idea that Mr. Claus is very much in love with Mrs. Claus. There's an accident. she gets run over by the sleigh, and Santa's jolly meter goes all the way down, and the elves sort of like reveal that once his meter goes to zero, it's not going to be good, and he just kind of like loses his stuff and kind of goes on a really weird Santa rampage, right?
That's pretty much the long and short of it. Yeah.
And I'm not doing it justice because it is really fun and excellent book. But did you come up with this story like on your own? How does something like this sort of like develop? Were you working with your artist or I think we chatted a little bit about this on the last podcast, but we didn't really get into the plot because there's also a mother and son couple in this family, in this single mother thing, which is like beyond twisted. I was like, oh my God, rereading it. I was like, I forgot about this. Like to the point of where she's like playing Silence of the Lambs with him in the house. And it's like, I totally forgot about that. And it's just hard hitting, like crazy stuff. Like how, I mean, it's a stupid question to ask, but I'm assuming that you went into this being like, I want to write something jacked up about Christmas. And then how did the ideas just like flow from that?
So it started out as a screenplay, as so many comics do these days. But many, many years ago when I was a fresh-faced young boy just out of NYU.
Yeah.
NYU had something called, it was called like the logbook or something like that, where you could pitch your log line.
Okay.
And they would publish it in a book that they would then circulate to publishers and agents and managers. And so so I was talking to my friend Alexander. He's my co-writer on all the fried stuff, Alexander Philippe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he and I were talking one day back in like, I don't know, 2000. And he was like, oh, you should totally pitch something to this logline book. And, you know, if anybody's interested in reading it, then you can write it. But write it until then, which is terrible advice, by the way. Because, you know, we came up with this pitch and pitched it. And then, of course, a lot of people wanted to read it and they wanted to read it like yesterday.
Yeah.
And suddenly we had to write a screenplay, which neither one of us had done before.
Yeah.
So we were kind of riffing on Nightmare on Elm Street.
Gotcha.
And we were thinking like, well, you know, that's such a perfect idea. This idea of like, you know, Freddy Krueger coming to you in your dreams. Well, who else comes to you while you're sleeping?
Yeah.
And like a light bulb went off. Right. And we were like, oh, Santa.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we started thinking about, you know, what if some of these things happened and Santa kind of went nuts, and it started out like down a more horror type path, and it wound up morphing as we were writing it into more of dark comedy.
Sure.
And anyway, the bones of the story were really good. The script itself, you know, was written by a couple of young guys who needed some more experience, but the bones of the story were still there. So the Santa blowjob was still in that. Very important to the plot. It's like a Jenga game. If you pull out one piece, pull out a blowjob, the whole story falls apart.
Oh no.
So
that is a sentence I never thought I would hear, but I'm grateful for the holiday treat. Oh my gosh.
And the Silence of the Lambs game actually was probably a fresher reference back in 2000, but we felt like it kind of, when we were putting it in the comics, we felt like it had aged well. That's still a very good movie. That's
sure.
The touchstone and for a young FBI agent. And that's our main character, Ellie, is the mom.
Mm-hmm.
The story, and her son Byron has this interaction with Santa, who's on this rampage. And Byron realizes after talking to Santa that Santa knows where his dad is. Byron's dad ran away years ago because he was a wannabe elf who wanted to join Santa at the workshop. So Byron runs away to find his dad. He runs away to the North Pole. And so the story is really about Ellie trying to find her son and realizing kind of that she's been an imperfect mom. Such as playing Silence of the Lambs with him.
Imperfect is an understatement, but go on.
And so it's really, that's the heart of the story, Christian. It's not just Santa blowjobs. It's a real touching family story.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's funny because I remember reading the first issue and being like, wow, this is really crazy. How much crazier can it get? But like by the time you get to the second issue, there's a little bit more of sort of like heartfelt development. Like you start to feel for this kid. But at the same time, it's surrounded by all this great wrongness of like messing with Christmas and the Christmas tropes and all that stuff. And it's just amazing to me that it just pulls off like what it pulls off. Because for me, it's like, it's very hard to sort of like pull off comic humor well, you know, particularly if it's sort of, how do I put this? And not in its, but like juvenile sort of like humor, like, you know what I'm saying? Like very raw, like, you know, for grown-up sort of humor that's considered juvenile. It's kind of hard sometimes to pull off in comics, but this was something that, as I was reading it, like, it made me sit up and it made me go like, oh my God, this is actually funny. Like, you know what I mean? And it's just, yeah, it makes sense that it came from two college kids though. Like it totally makes sense. So you had written the screenplay, and did you actually like send it out to people? Like did
yeah,
people?
Oh, yeah, we did. We had a lot of requests for it. There was a like a decent amount of interest.
When an agent or a manager goes like gets to the Santa blowjob page, like what, like how do they react to that? Because it's funny, we chatted about this in our last interview with, you know, Pregnant Bitches of War, where it was like, you had written it sort of as a film idea, I think as well. And I was like, how did you think you were going to sell that? And to me, I'm like this again, I'm like, how did you think you were going to sell that? You know?
Well, we weren't thinking, Christian. That's we were just laughing. I think that's sort of if we were smarter business people, at least back then, but probably now too, we definitely would have thought of some of these things. You know, like because comments that we get like Pregnant Bitches of War, like I can't tell you how many times somebody's come up to me and or like messaged me and been like, hey, that was really good. Like, I never would have picked this up off the shelf with that title. But I read it, and it's really great.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's nice of you to say, but, you know, we have a real problem with that title.
Yeah.
But it sort of says what the book is, you know? So I don't really know how you change it. And the Santa blowjob was kind of the same thing. Like, I think maybe in the comic we pull it off a little.
Well, it's subtle. I mean, you're not seeing anything, but yeah. You get the idea.
You get the idea. But, you know, the screenplay, I think, like, we really just went for it. Like, it was like,
oh
I mean,
my
it
God.
Really opened. In fact, I think it actually opened in the first draft. I think we had a line about they were actually having sex. It wasn't just a blowjob. And we actually had a line about you saw Santa's butt bobbing like a
squirrel. Oh, God.
Nice. And that was sort of like on page one. And I guess our thought process was, you know, again, if you read this on the first page, you know what you're getting.
Yeah, yeah.
But a few people were definitely like, dude, you can't do that. Maybe that's why we added like the cryptic opening to the comic to sort of ease you in.
No, I mean, so you wrote the screenplay and it goes out, and I'm guessing that I would assume that it never sort of like gelled with anyone, or just the project never took off. I mean, so you had it sort of like sitting on the shelf. I'm imagining that a couple years ago, you kind of were like thinking like, oh, let me pull this off the shelf and make it into a comic now.
Yeah, it's because, you know, I'm lazy, Christian. I don't ideas.
I don't know. You've had some successful Kickstarters. I don't think that's lazy. That seems very productive in my opinion, but.
Well, thank you, sir. I think about writers like Stephen King is one of my favorite writers, and he's constantly pulling out things that he started writing 20 years ago.
Sure.
You know, in like Blaze was a book he wrote. He started writing when he was a kid. I think Under the Dome was something he started. Even the John F. Kennedy assassination one, 11/22/63.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I think that was something he was sort of collaborating with his younger self. Mm-hmm. And like that really interested me, sort of this idea of like, well, what if we go back and we revisit something that that we weren't really skilled enough to pull off the first time? And what if we could do it right? And let's do it as a comic book. Let's just get it done.
So, I mean, talk about that process a little bit, because I'm imagining a script is probably like, what, 130 pages or something like that. And this is, how many issues is this going to be? It seems like one is coming out. Is it one coming out every year, or is
that's
that
the plan? I mean, like with Kickstarter and with indie comics, it's tough to do like a monthly schedule. We tried when we first launched with PBOW and Deadskins, we tried to like get that out on a monthly basis, and it just doesn't happen. It's just impossible.
Sure.
So, one a quarter would be ideal, but because this is sort of a seasonal holiday comic,
yeah,
it seemed to make sense to do one a year. And I know it's tough to make people wait, but we think it's kind of a special event, and it's worth waiting for.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, and it's definitely. But is it going to be finite? Is it like 3 issues, 4 issues?
Yeah. So we originally kind of planned it out to be 5. That was our initial thinking, but then it's probably looking like it's going to be 4.
Okay.
Just so I feel like if we go to 5, we're going to just kind of have to pad it.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do that. I'd rather keep it kind of tight, but that, you know, it could be like an extra sized final issue or something. Like, we'll tell the story, but I think 4 is probably good. And then we'll probably put out a trade. And then, I don't know, Christmas keeps coming, and this we launched today, and, it's a 12-day campaign. And we're trying to raise more than we've ever asked for before, but we're about halfway funded after 12 hours, and it's by far our most backed campaign on the first day, by far the most we've raised on a first day, and like I'm talking a full 24 hours.
Yeah.
It's only been live for 12, and we've already far surpassed our previous best 24-hour totals. So I think people seem to dig it, and.
Yeah.
I feel like I'd be kind of stupid to stop it now. So
sure. Well, why are you doing sort of like a 12-day campaign though? Why a shorter one? Because it's usually like 30 days, right, or something like that.
Like 30 days, but so 12 days of Red Christmas, right?
Okay, sure.
So that makes it sort of, I don't know, thematic.
Yeah.
So it really was kind of all I could handle at the moment. So we launched a PBOW campaign early last year, like spring of last year, and then we did Red Christmas at the end of the year, and then we did a Refried Comics in spring of this year, and then another Red Christmas that launched today. So it's a lot of work doing the Kickstarters, and it gets super draining. And it's even though it's not the monthly grind, it is sort of like all the Kickstarter prep, and then you launch and you have the whole campaign, and then you still have to get the book to print and get it out and mail it out. So it's felt a little bit like being on a treadmill.
Uh-huh.
And at this point right now, like I'm currently selling my house.
Yeah.
I'm purchasing a new house in another state. So like I launched the book today and I'm also like meeting with the real estate agent and I'm also like trying to finalize the closing in this other state. And so I was kind of like, you know what, 12 days, let's just do boom, get in, get out, get it over with.
So you weren't stressed out that like, what if we don't make our money in 12 days? Like does 30 days feel like more of a window? What was that?
I was insanely stressed out.
Oh, really? But you were like, this is the only amount of time. I mean, this is a more comfortable amount of time for me to work with.
Yeah, I just couldn't stretch it out any longer. And also I didn't want it to end so close to Christmas that everybody felt like, oh my God, I'm broke. You know, I don't want to back this Kickstarter campaign. I want people to still feel like they have some cash in their pockets.
And sure.
As long as they're spending for Black Friday and Cyber Monday, why don't they buy our book too?
So, I mean, it seems like you've definitely sort of discovered a niche as far as like holiday tales are concerned. Were you a fan of stuff like, Black Christmas and Silent Night, Deadly Night? Because, I mean, this isn't like necessarily horror, but there are sort of like horror aspects to it. I mean, to me, it's funny because I just discovered the show, and I know it's been on for years, but I just didn't want to pay for another cable channel, but it just showed up on Netflix, Ash versus the Evil Dead. And this is very much, and I love, like, I watched the first episode on Netflix and I was like, oh my God, like this show is for me, which is really weird. Anybody that knows me, I mean, I do like horror, I do like comedy, I do, but it's just like every once in a while, I'll surprise people with something that I just like really love. And Ash versus the Evil Dead, I was just like, this was made for me. And that's very much like the feel that I get from your book. It's something that I feel like Sam Raimi, you know, would have done like in his youth, like a crazy Christmas sort of like horror comedy. Were these other Christmas movies or horror movies like an influence on you? Are you into that sort of thing or like?
No, I'd say like I'm more informed by like Roald Dahl or Shel Silverstein.
Really?
Kind of the twisted kid stuff that you know, isn't always really for kids. Like if you read some of this stuff as an adult, you're like, man, that's twisted. That's
sure.
Sick. And yeah, I mean, like I'm aware of some of those movies that are out there, but I think probably if I watch them, I'd be afraid of being too influenced by them.
Uh-huh.
But something like Ash versus the Evil Dead, which I haven't seen, but
that's so good.
But I feel like it's something that would be right up my alley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were talking about like going all the way with something and that show just goes all the way. Like it is just, I mean, I'm into the second season and I've been sort of like not just like binging it right away. I've been saving it here and there, partially because my wife gets kind of grossed out by it. I mean, she's a trooper. She likes horror stuff. She doesn't like horror stuff, but she'll watch it with me. But Ash even goes to places where she's like, oh, this is disgusting. I'm going to bed. So, I mean, obviously your book is not like that into sort of gore, but it is very much into those crazy like humor moments that are just outrageous where it's just like, oh, I can't believe you just did that, you know?
Yeah, we sort of tread that uncomfortable territory where horror and comedy meet. And so you bringing up Ash versus the Evil Dead, like I do think that's a good comp for it. Not that I've seen that show, but I'm familiar with like Evil Dead 2, you know, and Darkness. And so I think it does sort of comfortably fit in that sort of thing. So you're even saying them in the same sentence. That's a huge compliment. I'll take it.
Well, good. You should be complimented because it's a great show and your book is great. We sort of mentioned that, you know, Christmas is, you know, once a year and you've been doing them yearly, but you've had some other projects and I kind of want to, you know, get to that in a little bit, particularly the refried comics, because I thought that's a genius idea. But there's this thing that I've been coming across with like indie comics creators and Kickstarter people and stuff like this. And the sort of thinking for a long time has been like, oh, you got to come out with a comic. It's got to be regular. You know, if you're doing a web comic, it's got to come out every week. If you're doing a comic, it's got to come out every month. You have to be like on a set schedule. It's got to, you know, what is your thinking about that sort of thing? Because I'm sort of seeing like a lot of really great talent making like really interesting comics, particularly on Kickstarter or on the web. And they are very much, and it's sort of a thing that I've embraced, not necessarily because I'm lazy, but because I'm sort of just tired. Like it goes up when it goes up, or it comes out when it comes out. Obviously you have a Christmas deadline to meet, like with this book, you know, so that it hits the holiday season. But what is your thinking about that? Because it seems like there's this whole other thing that's taking place where it's like, yeah, maybe it doesn't need to sort of like be month to month or come out every week. Maybe there is a patient fan base that will like wait for your stuff. What are your thoughts on that sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, we did our first campaign. Our first Kickstarter campaign was the first issue of Red Christmas, and I was totally drained by it. We didn't really have the audience to support it. Uh-huh. But I got it over the finish line, you know, by just some elbow grease, you know, getting out there and knocking on doors and getting people to come out and back the campaign. But you know, there was a big lag. I mean, of almost, maybe it was almost 3 years in between issue one and issue two, which is why.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Yeah,
and that's why last year we put the two issues together in the big, 64-page book. Because I knew we were going to have a lot more new backers than necessarily returning backers after such a long time. But, you know, we did have plenty of people who came back and backed, and even people, you know, when we did, so we did a compilation of PBOW. That was a book that we launched in 2013, and we started doing it as a webcomic, and we would release, we thought we were going to, you know, be bajillionaires releasing these PDFs for like a buck.
Yeah.
And our philosophy very much was like, no, it's got to come out monthly. It's got to be, you know, it's got to be this, it's got to be that. It's got to be like all the books that you see from Marvel and DC.
Yeah.
And besides the fact that that wasn't really all that realistic, there weren't that many people waiting for it to come out. You know, we had a passionate fan base with PBOW, but it was small. But by the time we launched the trade, and that was last year, so that was 2017. So that was a few years after we had stopped producing the series. Mm-hmm. We released the trade on Kickstarter, and it was awesome seeing people come back and back that, you know, I just figured had totally written us off.
Yeah.
There was one guy, Luke, and I'm going to butcher his last name, Sirocco. I hope I didn't kill that, but he's a DJ on like an internet radio station based out of Denver. And we launched Fried Comics at the very first Denver Comic Con back in 2013. We had a panel, and Luke came to the panel and he recorded it for the radio show. And we had never met Luke before. I don't know. He just saw us on the schedule and decided, hey, I'm going to come out and record these guys in their panel about this crazy comic thing they're doing.
Yeah.
And he was a supporter that came back for PBOW years later. You know, James Ferguson is a guy who does a great, podcast, and it Funny Book Splatter. And, He backed like our first campaign, and he came back, you know, like, so I guess what I'm trying to say very awkwardly is that there is an audience that will be patient and will wait. I do think though that to get momentum going, you have to have some kind of schedule. So that since we launched PBOW last year in the spring, I've tried to do two a year and one basically in the spring and one at Christmas time.
Gotcha.
So that way, you know, at least people start to feel like there's kind of a rhythm to it.
Yeah.
And one of the things I've kind of fell into that the last couple of campaigns that's really helped is that I know the launch date of the next campaign as I'm fulfilling the previous campaign.
Okay.
you may have noticed with Refried Comics, right, I was able to slip in a postcard announcing the Red Christmas date and telling people, hey, come back on this date. So people got their packages shortly before the new campaign arrived, and there was an awareness of it. And I think that really helped us get off the ground strong.
Yeah.
But I think people do kind of appreciate a rhythm, and it does kind of snowball, but it doesn't have to be monthly. It doesn't have to be, bi-monthly. It just has to be, I think, a schedule that people know what to expect.
Sure. Yeah. So you've mentioned a couple of times that the Kickstarter drained you. So I wanted to ask you what is, and it may be a stupid question, what are the things that you're putting into a Kickstarter that make it so hard to like, that make it like emotionally or physically or whatever draining? Because my wife ran an Indiegogo for some plays that she produced, used Indiegogo, nothing against Kickstarter. It was a lot of hard work, and I saw it and I was like, I don't have the endurance for that, but to people who have never started a Kickstarter or who fund Kickstarters, what is the work that you're doing? Because I think there's a lot of people that make the mistaken assumption that it's like, okay, you put up a video, you put up every once in a while, you make an announcement and everything's good. But what are some of the things just to let people know? And then what are some of the things that you consider successful practices to get your Kickstarter funded?
Yeah, so that's a fantastic question. So it really is a lot of work. It's a campaign. I mean, it is sort of like running for president.
Uh-huh.
You're shaking hands, you're kissing babies, and I kind of wasn't joking when I said, knocking on doors and drumming up business. I'm talking about it at the bus stop when I'm with my kids, taking them to school. I'm talking about it to the other parents.
So wait, you're telling your parents in your school, you're saying like, I'm doing this thing, Red Xmas, and it's got Santa with his North Pole getting polished. And it, like, you have no like worries about like parents being like, wait a minute, there's this guy, Clay. His kids go to my kid's school. Like, are you serious? Like, you have no.
I do sometimes because another thing I do, I used to
Your wife's never like, hey, Clay, don't tell them about the Red Xmas or anything like that.
She's actually been, she's been really good. She's been very supportive. But I used to be what I call a rock star for babies. I used to play in a group called Little Maestros based out of New York. And we would play rock shows, rock and roll music for babies. And we would get hired to play like these insane 1-year-old birthday parties in the Hamptons. Right.
Really?
Like crazy blowout bashes for the 1-year-old, where like they've hired an ice cream truck, they're having camel rides, and they've got this rock and roll band playing a 5-minute set. So I used to do that professionally, and then when we moved to Georgia, I stopped doing that. But my son was young enough; he was going to a preschool, and so I talked my way into playing some shows for the preschools in exchange for tuition.
Okay.
So I found myself getting friended by a lot of like the preschool teachers and like the preschool parents.
Yeah.
So they would send me like Facebook friend requests, and I'd be like, oh, all right, I'll accept it. But I'm the guy that posts crazy videos on Facebook.
Yeah.
I'll make some crazy thing or I'm doing Fried Comics, and if you're offended, I guess you get offended, but nobody's complained. But I do sometimes feel kind of weird thinking about the preschool parents.
So what are some of the other things you do? I mean, you're chatting it up like to people at the schools. I mean, like what are you, how are you reaching out to get people to fund your Kickstarter? Because I think those are the sort of secrets that everyone is like,
yeah,
how do you do that? Because so, I mean, I see Kickstarters by like pros in the comics industry that don't get funded. People like that, used to make comics in the 80s or 90s, and maybe they're not like doing stuff anymore, but they're like, I'm making my comeback or whatever. And sometimes it's kind of sad. You're just like, oh man, that guy's Kickstarter didn't get funded. So what are some of the secrets that you think you need to do to sort of get your Kickstarter funded, and which will probably ensure that I will never run a Kickstarter. But anyway, go ahead.
No, you can totally do it, Christian. And I'll tell you two secrets. When you're first starting out, you probably don't have a big enough audience to pull off a massive campaign. Most campaigns don't, especially for comics, most campaigns are under $10,000. And comics are expensive to produce. So if you're just starting out, maybe don't expect that you're going to cover all of your expenses. And you may, on your first campaign, you may have to heavily rely on family and friends. Mm-hmm. And as much as that kind of, stinks to have to say, it is kind of true until you build a track record. So yeah. I'm fortunate at this point. This is my fifth campaign that I launched. I've got a track record. People know that I deliver, and they've read the books and they enjoy them. So so that has me in a little bit of a different place than I was on my first campaign, when I was like, oh, I'll just throw this up on Kickstarter and then I'll be a millionaire, Nobody was backing, and I had to be like, oh my God, I got to find people. I actually have to go out and find people to back the campaign. And that really is what it's about on the first campaign. But the secret, I'll totally tell you the secret, and that's the newsletter.
Okay.
I started, so on that very first campaign, when I realized that the campaign was going to fail because I didn't have an audience that could support it, I just Googled how to run a Kickstarter campaign, how to fund my Kickstarter. And I came up with all of these blog posts by a guy named Tyler James, and he does the Comics Launch podcast.
Oh, okay.
And he had, at that point, he didn't have the podcast, but he had all these blog posts. And so I read every single one, and I took every single bit of his advice and got that campaign funded.
Okay.
Was so impressed by what he did when he started releasing the podcast. I started listening to it, and at some point he created a course about starting an email newsletter. And we had kind of had a newsletter when we first started Fried Comics, but I wasn't very good at it. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know who I was talking to or how I should be doing it. And I started that. It's been going a couple of years now, and I send an email every 2 weeks, or I should say Frida sends an email every 2 weeks.
Frida, yeah.
That's our waitress character who is your guide through the world of Fried Comics. And she sends two emails a month, and it's really about building a relationship with that audience. Mm-hmm. So that is something that arrives regularly and gets in front of people. So even though the comics aren't coming out monthly, the readers are still hearing from Fried Comics twice a month. And they're hearing from Frida, and they're hearing about what we're working on, and they're seeing bits of artwork. And so that gives people time to get kind of excited for it.
Yeah.
So I'm at the point, luckily, where I've built up the newsletter enough that I know that on launch day, I can just write an email and hit send, and a decent amount of people are going to read that email and be like, yes, I would like to back this project.
Gotcha.
But that took 2 years of writing emails every 2 weeks. So that's what I mean by it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And same thing with building the page. That's marketing. That's writing a marketing landing page. And so I had to learn how to do that and how to structure it. And again, I can't recommend enough the Comics Launch course that Tyler James runs. That's been enormously helpful for me, figuring out how to do these things. But writing that, I mean, I think I spend about a week writing the page every single time.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not certain that anybody, reads the whole thing. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But sure. But I feel like it's an important component to it. Making the video, I've really gotten into making the videos, and I try to make them the best that they can be. And all of that prep work takes time. And then once the campaign launches, Especially with a 30-day campaign, you tend to hit this lull in the middle where just like nothing's happening and you feel like, oh my God, just make this thing be over.
Yeah.
Weeks left. So that's another reason why I cut out some time.
Gotcha. So for people who have read the first two issues, what should they be expecting in this third issue that, you know, now that they're coming back? I saw some stuff on the Kickstarter. I watched the video. It seems like you get into the sort of secret origin of Santa a little bit.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. This is sort of, this starts out sort of the secret origin of Santa. You know, you mentioned sort of like the crazy religious cult in the beginning of the first issue, and that comes back in this issue. That's actually a very important part of the story that's coming up now. But where our story starts this time around is that Ellie, our FBI agent mom, who's looking for her son, finds a survivor of the Great Elf Holocaust of 1962. And she learns the secret origin of Santa from this elf named Melvin. And Melvin tells her all about how Santa was a healer, and he'd give gifts to children, and he got married and hung out with the elves, and then he went to prison. He came out a little weird, and some angry parents burned him to death.
Oh!
And then this pagan cult resurrected him, and then he got he's immortal. See, Christian, and so his mortal wives die. He tends to lose his shit, and that tends to be very bad for the elves.
Gotcha.
So when his last wife died in 1962, that was Jessica from the old claymation specials.
Nice, that's awesome.
My lawyers say that I didn't just say that, but you heard it. but when she died in 1962, that was really bad. That was the worst. He had a real affinity for her, and that was the Great Elf Holocaust, and all the elves died except for one. And he's kind of Santa's kind of come back on an even keel until now. Now that his latest wife Glenn Claus has died, it's bad again.
Yeah. So at this point, we're dealing with the origin of Santa Claus. Anything new happening with the young boy that you can reveal, or does he meet his father, or is that too much of a spoiler?
Well, let me just say, you might just meet him at the very end. A little teaser for our next issue. But the centerpiece of this issue is Santa versus the Easter Bunny.
Nice, because I was gonna ask, like, any ideas for like spinoffs? Like, have you ever seen this? You probably haven't. Like, there's an animated movie called Rise of the Guardians, where it's like Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny. It's a DreamWorks thing, which is really underrated in my opinion. And when we saw it, I loved it, and I actually bought it on Blu-ray because I tend to buy that animation stuff on Blu-ray because I love the way that it looks. But yeah, there's this movie, and it deals with like Santa Claus, and like Hugh Jackman is the voice of the Easter Bunny, and he carries like a boomerang, and like, yeah, it's like all the Tooth Fairy is in it, and they're all like sort of like not superheroes, but they're like they rise to the defense of, like, you know, when the planet is in trouble and stuff like that. They come together sort of like a mythical Justice League. So I was wondering if you were planning on spinning any of that stuff off.
That is amazing. And yes, absolutely.
That's great.
The Easter Bunny played a big role in the screenplay. Again, so many of these things from the screenplay are coming back. It wasn't that the story was bad. It was just we did not have the skills to pull it off back then. So so we really centered this issue around that conflict with the Easter Bunny. So that's coming up, and Fabio hasn't quite drawn that stuff yet, but he sent me the thumbnails, and they are going to be phenomenal.
That's so great.
I'm really stoked. And I
can't wait to see the Easter Bunny.
We immortalized this in our variant cover. We have our Easter, our ET poster variant cover. which depicts a flying Easter egg chasing Santa's sleigh across.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. That's great.
And the Easter Bunny is, his name is Hugh Cottontail. And he's very reminiscent of a certain magazine publisher who is no longer with us.
No way. Oh my God. This is going to be great. I cannot wait to see this now. So wait, when is the, I didn't look on the Kickstarter. When is the fulfillment? Is it pre-Christmas or post-Christmas? Because last year it was post-Christmas. And I was like, what are you doing? You're giving me a Christmas comic after Christmas.
So Christmas is to be enjoyed all year round, Christian.
Nice.
I set the fulfillment date as Christmas in July. But but between you and me and all of your listeners, I think we'll be able to fulfill before then.
Uh-huh.
But it's not going to be before Christmas. It's just unfortunately the Fabio's schedule drawing it wasn't going to work out to get it done before Christmas. Mm-hmm. And so we felt like it was a better plan to try to sell it to people during the Christmas season while they were in the holiday spirit than it was to try to sell it in the summer and have it available by the end of the year.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so we went with this schedule, and you'll have Christmas in July. We'll get some eggnog and put on your Santa hat, some Christmas tunes.
I can't stand Christmas in July, but anyway, I'm sure you've seen my Facebook posts when they start putting out like decorations in August, and I'm like, stop it! And I'm like, I'm very firm on my like post-Thanksgiving, that's when it starts, not before.
Yes.
It starts after Thanksgiving. Don't do anything before Thanksgiving. It's not allowed. But now stores and everything, they're stacking stuff up like in September. And I'm like, what happened? Like, when did the memo go out that people could just start Christmas like in September? It's wrong.
Christmas is whenever, you know. You live in LA, right?
Yeah. That doesn't mean that Christmas just starts whenever people want. No, Christmas starts after Thanksgiving. I have to enjoy Halloween and zombie movies and slasher movies and all that stuff. And then after that, I get ready for stuffed on my turkey and the cranberry sauce. And then Christmas starts. That's the way it should go.
Fair enough. We don't
start Christmas in September. It's just wrong. It's wrong.
It's wrong.
It's just wrong. And are you going to do a Halloween comic? You should do a Halloween comic.
We should. Last year we actually launched last year's book on Halloween, and we ran till the beginning of December. And I can't tell you. I think you were one of them. I got so many comments from people being like, "Why are you running now? It's not."
Yes, I'm a stickler for it. Ooh, it just gets me angry. I like walk into like a Lowe's and they'll have like the Christmas lights up and it's like late September and I'm like, school just started. Stop it. It just drives me
animated. I can see you over there.
I hate it. Yeah, we're doing the rare video chat. Like, I don't usually do video chats, but you started it, so I was like, all right, I'll let you see me.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Refried Comics before we sign off. You did another Kickstarter earlier in the year, and it's called Refried Comics, and this is a genius idea, another genius idea. Explain what Refried Comics are, or is.
So Refried Comics is our we took old public domain comics and we stripped out all the dialogue and we gave them new dialogue to create all new stories.
Uh-huh.
This is sort of our take on what was that? It was the Woody Allen movie. Was it What's Up, Tiger Lily? He did that with like an old Japanese movie or something.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is sort of our take on that, and I think to credit where credit is due, Alexander came up with that idea. We were trying to think of something that we could do that wouldn't really cost us money, because comics is very expensive.
Where did you find the license free comics or whatever?
So there are
public domain.
There are tons of sites online you can go and you can find the public domain comics, and they're all if for people who are not familiar. And I probably should have done a little better job explaining this during the campaign. If you're not familiar with the idea of public domain comics, it's not illegal to take these comics and rework them, because They're what's called public domain. They belong to the public. And this usually happens because in the case of certain comics, maybe people didn't never filed a copyright. Mm-hmm. And so because they were just publishing these things that they thought were trash and nobody would care about 50 years later. So they didn't they weren't interested in like necessarily saying, no, this is mine and I'm going to build, you know, Mickey Mouse or whatever. You know, certain people like Walt Disney were very proprietary about some of those things. But
yeah.
But the way public domain works is that certain characters after a certain amount of time fall into the public domain. So, for instance, Tarzan is in the public domain. Anybody can write a story about Tarzan. The problem is that Edgar Rice Burroughs' estate has done a lot of trademark work on Tarzan, which is very different from copyright.
Yeah. And
so they are kind of protective of it from that way. But this is a long, boring answer to the question, which is that with public domain comics, you can publish them yourself. You can rewrite them. You can do whatever you want because they're literally owned by the public.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the short way of explaining. And I actually, as I was researching this, I found out. So sort of like the Tarzan thing, I found crazy things like Captain Marvel, Shazam. You know. He's in the public domain because his very first appearance was never copyrighted. So,
what?
So here's the crazy thing. Here's the crazy thing. So his first appearance was never copyrighted. So anybody can write stories based off of that first appearance. However, so the reason why like DC Comics can't publish a comic called Captain Marvel is because Marvel Comics, seeing that, you know, Captain Marvel was in the public domain and nobody had done anything with that name.
Yeah.
Like, boom, we're trademarking the name Captain Marvel.
Uh-huh.
So Marvel owns the trademark to Captain Marvel. So now DC is publishing a character because they paid for the rights from, I guess it was Fawcett, to the whole Captain Marvel universe because lots of other stories were written about Captain Marvel and the Captain Marvel universe after that first appearance, and those are copyrighted.
Okay.
So like if somebody was to try to write like a story based on the public domain Captain Marvel, you couldn't do anything that was copyrighted. Like it's very convoluted.
Wow, that sounds crazy. I always thought that they had let the copyright lapse, like Fawcett had let the copyright lapse. That's why Marvel could publish their, you know, get the copyright for Captain Marvel or the trademark for the Captain Marvel name. But I guess I was wrong.
Yeah, I think it was more that like DC bought the rights to what Fawcett had done after the fact, but because the first issue never had a copyright on it or a copyright statement, and I could be wrong. I'm sure someone will check my facts, but my understanding is that they just never filed the copyright, and so therefore, like anybody who wants to could write a Captain Marvel story.
Yeah.
But you. You know, like DC has trademarked the Shazam title, so you have to be very like you couldn't say Shazam, you couldn't call your comic Shazam, you know.
Interesting. I wonder how much of a legal fight you would have because I'm sure he says Shazam in the first issue, you know.
I think he can say it, but I don't think you could advertise it, you know, as like the title of the book. Like it gets very tricky what you can and can't do with some of those things. But there are a lot of comics that were published back in the golden age that were just kind of forgotten and nobody cares about. I can't really think of any like specific ones that are jumping out to me, but loads of books that were just kind of cranked out that it was just publishers trying to have some content out there, right?
And yeah.
They weren't looking to build a big empire like DC or Marvel. They were just trying to stay in business and publish some stuff. And so so for various reasons, the work has lapsed into the public domain. So it belongs to the public. Anybody can do whatever they want. And so we just decided let's just create brand new stories, improv style. And which meant that as we stripped out the balloons, we could only go forward. We couldn't go back. And what I mean by that is we'd look at the naked art one page at a time, and we'd come up with a story. And if we established a plot point, if we established that somebody had this kind of relationship with somebody, we couldn't then get to page two and realize, oh my God, we screwed that up. We got to go back and fix page one.
Oh, gotcha.
We had to, it has to be yes and, right?
So it's like an improv sort of thing. Yeah.
Totally done improv style.
Nice.
So this made these refried comics like so bizarre and so out there, because we literally had to just make it up on the fly and then accept whatever we had already created and adding to it.
Yeah. Oh, that's a genius idea. That's great. And I have come across, when my daughter was younger, I was pulling a lot of public domain comics from a library that was online. Like, there were a lot of like really good kid stuff that was like really innocent and, you know, great for, you know, and I would put them on my tablet and just hand it to my daughter and just be like, oh, you like this? Like, there was one that was an obvious ripoff of Mighty Mouse or something. And I was just like, here, try this. Or, you know, there were like a little, you know, every once in a while you would come across something that was just like really racist and you were just like, oh my God, or just like inappropriate for today, you know, because of the time they were made. So you had to be careful a little bit about what I was going to hand off to her. But yeah, I remember pulling a decent amount and being like, oh, this is great because I can save some money, you know? I mean, it's funny because I know that like publishers like Dynamite and other publishers have taken public domain heroes and sort of made new stories out of them.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like completely new like stories and universe. And I always wonder, because I know that, say, like one of my favorite movies, Night of the Living Dead, is in the public domain because they never put the copyright, like which is like, to me, is just like the dumbest thing ever, where not the fact that they forgot to put the copyright, but the fact that the laws of our country are like, sorry, you forgot to put the copyright, slug. It's just, that's the way it is. You know, I mean, it's just moronic. But in any case, like, yeah, I'm just, what I remember discovering, like, and I forget which site it was, these public domain comics and being like, oh my God, there is a huge amount of stuff out there that people just don't even know about. And it seems like you could just, if you wanted to, but then you could make new adventures, but then you wouldn't have like the rights to them, or would you just have the rights to the adventures that you created? Or it seems odd, but why would you want to do that? But I guess people do.
The rights. I mean, anybody has the rights to like Sherlock Holmes. I think anybody can write a Sherlock Holmes story.
I think there are
two, maybe at this point, two Sherlock Holmes short stories that are not in the public domain. The vast majority of the stuff with Sherlock Holmes is. So you could write a new story that references anything but those two stories that are still under copyright.
Yeah.
As soon as you write a story that references one of those stories, you're kaput. Like that's no good. So the thing with Dynamite is that, right, like if they're publishing a public domain character, there's nothing to say you, Christian, couldn't go publish your own version of that very same character, but you don't reference anything that Dynamite did.
Yeah, gotcha.
Copyright to what they did to that character.
Gotcha. Oh, wow, that's awesome. So how can people get, if they didn't know about the Kickstarter, can you still get the Refried Comics?
Yeah, so right now, if you go to friedcomics.com/redxmas, you can get we have some catch up tiers where I think there's a digital one where you can get everything we've done, and that includes Refried Comics. And then I think some of the higher tiers in there might have a print copy. I think they do have a print copy, but we only did a very limited run of Refried, and I think honestly we only have something like 8 copies left.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we did a very limited print run and sold through most of it. So we have a very low supply of that. But never you fear. I'm sure we'll be bringing it back.
That's awesome. Well, Clay, I love your stuff. I love Red Xmas. I've got to read Pregnant Bitches of War at some point. Red Xmas is like, it was a delightful holiday surprise. Whenever I read it, I know it wasn't around Christmas, but I remember I specifically have a memory of sitting at my local car wash and reading it and being like, I don't want my car wash to be finished yet. I got to finish this. Like I did not want to put it down, and I just think it's fantastic and I cannot wait for the next chapter. It's just, I'm excited. Like I don't get excited about Kickstarter stuff, but this I'm very excited about.
That's awesome, man. I'm so,
yeah. Yeah. You guys have done a really great job and I can't wait to read the next chapter. And, I'm so glad to hear that you're over halfway funded, and I really hope that it makes its goal. By the time this airs, because we're recording Monday, it'll be Wednesday. So you'll probably have 9-8 days left. So anyone that's here, definitely go to Kickstarter, look for Red Xmas. What's the direct URL again? Friedcomics.com/
Red Xmas.
Red Xmas. Okay, great. Hey, baby. Well, thank you very much for coming back on the podcast. I loved having you, and you are welcome to come on anytime.
Thanks for having me, man. I'll be back next week, I guess.
Yeah, whenever you want to. Well, you're moving, so maybe not that quickly. Yeah. Well, good luck with the move. And this has been the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. My name is Christian Horn. I have been on the line with Clay Adams from Fried Comics. Thank you for listening. Please fund his Kickstarter. I really need to see the next chapter of Red Xmas. It would be an awesome holiday gift to me and to Clay. And once again, thanks for listening. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. And we will be back soon with another episode. Ho, ho, ho. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Part-time fanboy.com.